It is a great pleasure for me to welcome Joanna Bato, our author of the short-listed novel. Sorry, I have to take off my headset again to tune into the right channel. I'm hearing the translation all the time.
Jetzt ist es besser. Gut. Und ich begrüße Sie.
And I also would like to welcome her translator, Lisa Palmes. We are going to start a conversation. We have a lot of material on the table. Hopefully, we'll be able to show you lots of it. But before we do that, let's go back to the book. Maybe it's a book that not everybody knows, so not everybody knows the narrative. It's a story that takes place in a region that is very typical for Joanna Bato's books. In Silesia, Waldbrich, Waldenburg, the German name of the place, it's a place that is a place of literature in itself, in its own right. It's a place that has many historical layers. The place was German one time, became Polish, and both nations, both German and Polish nations, have always been present, are still always present in that place. Oftentimes there's a reference to the fact that people went there, and when they went to bed, they still felt the warmth of the others who had left. Joanna Bato told me that this was also a typical thing for her own life, so it's very much autobiographical. They always talked about the post-German things, the post-German wardrobe, a post-German chair. So it's a very fragile place, a place of literature and fiction. The hero goes back to this place as a journalist because she wants to investigate murder or abduction cases. Children have disappeared, and our heroine, the journalist, tries to find them. It's a very labyrinthic novel with many layers. Going back to the Nazi times, there are subsurface mazes in that place. And the maze underground is reflected in the story, which is also like a maze. Joanna, what is the most important material that you have brought here? Well, I must say I was a bit confused when they asked me to bring material to this talk, because material, tangible things, have no special significance for me when I write books. But there are some things that belong to you, things on the table. Well, I looked around in my room, and I looked at the objects that always accompany me when I write. And one of those objects is here, and I'd like to show it to you. Hopefully, you can see it. What is it, Joanna? What do we see here? It's a cat skull. It looks at me. It always looks at me when I sit at my desk and work. This is my memento mori. This skull gives me a kind of constant feeling. I'm always reminded by this skull of the fact that everything is fragile. Everything can fall to pieces. Our life can fall to pieces. Darkness is always present. And even the things that happen at the opposite pole. We should also always use the moment. People who come to see me, they always ask me, is this the skull of your cat? No, it's not the skull of my cat that I have given to a taxidermist to preserve it. I found this cat skull during a trip to a Greek island where nobody lives. We were walking across the island and we saw this white and shiny object. It looked eerie and at the same time beautiful. And we also developed sinister narratives. We imagined things about this cat. How did it end up on this island? How did it die? There's a sentence I remember. It's in one of my books. I can't even remember. Maybe you know the book. The herring wakes up in the morning and says, I cry because I remember the fate of the cats of the whole world. And this sensitivity vis-a-vis the suffering of animals is important to me. It is something that moves me, that touches my soul. And a critic once wrote that in my books, I make the ontological difference between animals and human beings disappear. It sounds beautiful, and I think that's indeed true. This is what I do. So this little cat is always with me. And for the first time, this cat traveled to Germany with me. When I heard that you're going to bring a cat skull, I immediately thought of all the cats' names and ghosts in your story. And here, for the first time in your novel, there is something like Harry Potter, something very uncanny that takes us out of the real world. Nobody exactly knows who are the cat eaters you refer to in your book. These are some kind of science fiction characters or ghosts that influence people. Is there any reference, any relation between the cat's skull and the cats in your book, the ghosts in your book? Yes, obviously there is a relationship. But this relationship is introduced into the text in an not deliberate way. I do not know how these cat eaters look like. I cannot describe them rationally. I don't want to analyze them. I don't want to show them clearly, show their ontology. The cat eaters just come from the area that is most important for creation, because when you carry the name cat eater in your hand and you carry this aura of such a character, you know it has to be like that. It's nothing you develop on purpose. You do not develop these characters deliberately with the help of notes on a blackboard. It happens between the cat skull and something that is below our rational consciousness. Lisa Palmers, you talked about cat names and cat eaters. How about your material, the object that you brought? You brought a telephone directory. I have to explain this complicated situation. There is a very uncanny literary level of this novel where people have no access. These beings, like Harry Potter's, these cat eaters, are haunting places, and they're female characters who have cats' names. And since these are fictional literary characters, what did you do about them? And I think the telephone directory was important. Well, it is very fortunate that I had all the names there, because that was the best thing about the book, to create new words, to coin new names. And these cat women had very imaginary names, and immediately when a character was introduced, I thought of a name, but I looked at the family names out there in the telephone directory with that start with cats. Is that the Berlin directory? It's the German telephone directory, and I've found many names that start with cat, or cats in German. And it was fun looking up all the names and imagining how people could sound like. There is a person that's named Kaczynski. This is the German version of Kaczynski, which is the Polish version. So Polish names, or once Polish names that were transliterated into German were very important here, and these names played an important part in the translation process. What's also important, and I also have an object for that, is the maze, the labyrinth. And it takes us underground. It takes us under the surface of the town into the labyrinth of history. And here we have an image of these underground tunnels. The world that the Nazis have used underneath the surface. What is the role of these tunnels? What is the role of these images? Did you go into those tunnels, or did you always have these images on your mind? Was there research you did right there? In this book, I just used my memories, my childhood memories, the memories of my youth. I did not return to Waldbrich. It was not necessary because I grew up there. I nearly spent 19 years in this town. And it was a kind of an osmosis. I had really incorporated this atmosphere of the town, which has a second level, an underground level, secret tunnels and corridors. And somehow there is this treasure that Hitler had put there. And when I was a child, all of the time there was information that people allegedly know where the gold train is, and of course the amber room, and they wanted to excavate it all the time, but in a way it all disappeared again. It evaporated in a way. It was the treasure that symbolized eternal searches and never being able to find something tangible. Maybe some of you have heard also recently that another train was found in the region. The train was visualized, but all of a sudden this train is gone again. It's the story of my childhood, of my youth, and I thought it was interesting. Pionge, the castle, was a very exciting place for me. And this castle in my hometown is still very beautiful. And after many years where I had already escaped from that town that I used to hate as a child and young person, after all these years, I understood that I have uncovered this treasure. I succeeded in bringing out the stories from these underground tunnels. So I'm very grateful now to this former German soil, because this is a German-Polish history, part of our common history, all the things that I've uncovered. And I can tell you now that a couple of days ago, I was awarded the honorary citizenship of Waldenburg, which is an irony of fate. Well, you still think of this place a lot. It's not only this novel that deals that is located there. Sandy Mountain, this is the pocketbook, is a novel that you have written, and it's the most autobiographical novel. No book is ever autobiographical out of my six books. The story of my family maybe is autobiographical, or I come back to my home region, but I never had grandparents that came from the East. I imagine a genealogy. In my family, there is no such a clear-cut narrative. The hero of that book is also a person that has to go far away from home, liberate herself, leave the town or city behind in order to at least temporarily return and look for home, a home that is no longer the same home she was thinking of. But that is a kind of movement that has something to do with your life, because I think it all started in Japan. So you really had to go very far away geographically from your home in order to start writing about it. My literary career is very special because I never dreamed of becoming a writer. Never thought I would before I wrote Sandy Mountain. I didn't write any prose before that. And so I came out like a rabbit from a hat. All of a sudden it was there. I was there. And Sandy Mountain, when I think about what it means for my life, this book, I must say it's a book about a return. Return to the first home. Return to Waldenburg, the town of my youth, the town of my first language. So that's the narrative for me. It need not necessarily be interesting for the readers, but for me it is a story about emancipation fulfilled. You have to experience yourself out in the world. It's an important motive in Polish culture. You have to travel into the world in order to return to the persons you used to love, to the people that still love you. And you must try to understand them. Because when you're young and traveling to the world, you always have to leave something. Of course, you're always disrupting something in order to find your own story. And so Sandy Mountain is a story that tells my life in a specific way as well. Wonderful book. And since I like this photograph so much, I don't know what it is, but let me show it to our audience. Two girls with white hairbands, an old picture, an old photograph. Looking at the picture, I think of Alicia Tabor. Tabor, the hero of your book, is in a way, similar to Bato, your name, and she has a sister that she has lost. Does that photograph have anything to do with the two children? This photograph I found many years ago, many years before I started writing prose. I found this photograph in the photo album of my aunt. She didn't know who these girls were, and when I found this photograph, I had this Freudian impression that I'm seeing a picture that I don't understand on the one hand side, but on the other hand, it reflects the innermost structures of my way of thinking. This picture I always took with me. One of the girls is clearer. It looks more vivid, more alive, this one girl. And the other girl is pale. She's a bit in the shade, as if in the shadow of death. And when I started writing, it turned out that the motive of twins, the female doppelganger, is one of the most fundamental things, the characters that I can imagine. In each of my books, I have these female twins or doppelgangers. It's nothing rational. I cannot describe it. I have no rational language to describe these characters. It's a phenomenon that accompanies me. In every phase of my life, I try to call these twins differently. I call them twins. I call them doppelgangers. I call them shadows. Dunkelfastnacht, Dark Almost Night, is a book about two sisters, Alicia and Eva. Psychologically speaking, they could be seen as one and the same person. For me, in that book, that's much more important than the Polish political situation. The story of Alicia takes place at the very moment where my country has gone mad a bit. But this character is the most important one for me, and I now finished a new novel, and it's not going to be located in Waldenburg, but not far from there, 70 kilometers from Waldenburg, in a town that during the German regime was called Frankenstein. In this book, I will have a new version of Frankenstein. It's a book on monstrosity, and it will be based on these female twins. Again, this is my obsession in a way, so let me come back to that. That photograph is always with me, is always on my desk. I take it wherever I go, and so one probably will always feel that I look at the photograph. This photograph is very much alive for me. Probably I'm going to talk to them with two different names, and then obviously that will be a bit difficult.
When I met you a couple of years ago in Warsaw, when this new novel had not been translated to German yet, you told me from your childhood that back then in Waldenburg, there always was an imaginary German friend. You used to call her Helga, you told me. Helga would always be by your side. At the same time, she would be absent. And I was immediately, instantaneously thinking of her when you spoke about this photo, or was I going too far in thinking that? Well, that's one of the other traces here, because according to Freud, the twin structure has its roots in the child's narcissism. In their imagination, I grew up in a formerly German house, and there was furniture in the house that used to belong to the German owners. There was a really threatening big closet, a big cupboard, which I loved to sit in. And she would be my companion, because thanks to this very special sensitivity, the fact that before my grandparents, Germans had been the inhabitants of that house, used to be very scary to me as a child. Nobody would speak about it. Nobody would speak about the former owners, but you would feel their presence on your skin. They would leave these strange objects in their cupboard, and it was out of this feeling that I created Helga. Helga was name that would be used in a very negative way. If you wanted to say that somebody was of German origin, then you would say, oh, that Helga. It would be very disparaging. So out of Helga, I created something positive. My first friend, who would always be by my side. So Miss Palmis, I would love to come to one of your elements of materials. What else have you brought apart from the phone book? Well, we already spoke about it. I also came to think about Sandberg and Wolkenfern, Away from the Clouds. It hasn't been translated into German, into English. So Wolkenfern is a Sandy Mountains continuation, but Waldberg as a place and the very narrative style. And I wanted to see how my colleague Esther Kinski had translated the book before and what Joanna's wording on language would be in the German versions. Okay, so these were your working materials? What was the loop for? That was for the phone book. Okay. Okay. So it would have been great just to show it. I think Alice in Wonderland will have been important for both of you. Yes, the main character is called that, Alicia. So Alice and the rabbit's hole and Alicia becoming big and small and, you know, just like Alice. These were the references. This used to be one of your favorite books also, wasn't it? Yes, because I didn't like it back then. And again, when I took it into my hands again, I thought I can't relate to it, but I can see how close it is to this novel. Yes, it is so unreal, it's so mystical, so tale-like, and just so much like in a fairy tale, no other environment has ever been, no other setting has ever been than in this novel. As Ms. Bartor has to leave for the airport, we have to leave it here. I'm very sorry. This is the end of our conversation on literary material. I would like to say thanks to Joanna Bator and thanks to our translator, Lisa Palmas. Thanks a lot.